He's a Harvard man, a Harvard College and Harvard Law student, student of the classics, Bill Weld. Not only knows where Aleppo is, he knows that it was conquered by Alexander the Great in 333 BC. Much more recently, Weld was governor of Massachusetts. Today, he's the Libertarian vice presidential candidate running with Aleppo forgetting Gary Johnson. The Libertarian ticket has pulled around 7% in recent weeks, well below the necessary 15% hurdle to participate in televised debates. But that didn't keep Bill Weld from watching the Veep debate last night or speaking with us today. Governor Weld, welcome to The Takeaway.
John, good to be with you.
At what point did you cry uncle, Mr. Vice Presidential Candidate and former governor of Massachusetts, among other things?
Well, I never cry uncle, John. We don't do that in my family. I'm a happy warrior, and Gary Johnson and I are having a good time ricocheting around the country, holding rallies and fundraisers and talking to distinguished media folks like yourself. So it's going to be a great several weeks before the election, and we hope to make a significant impact on public opinion between now and then.
So you're continuing with the ticket?
Oh, absolutely.
No talk of getting out or anything?
Well, no, there's plenty of talk. It's not coming from me. It's coming from the Clinton camp, I think. But I don't really know.
Do you think they're concerned about a threat that you would take enough votes from the Democrats or people disgruntled about?
Everybody in the R party and the D party, they're all on hair trigger. And it's part of the brainwashing going on from Washington, the two parties there. They say, well, unless you vote for us, you're electing our adversary whom we really hate. And the two parties in Washington want to kill each other, and the two campaigns want to kill each other. And what we're getting is more heat and less light. And Gary Johnson and Bill Weld, that's us, the Libertarian ticket, we'd like to cast a little bit more light on the issues. We're the only ticket that's fiscally responsible and socially inclusive and welcoming and in favor of free trade and understands that immigration is actually good for the United States, not bad.
What do you attribute to Gary Johnson saying, I guess I wasn't meant to be president? I mean, it's not exactly your bumper sticker.
I don't know what hypothetical was put in front of him, but Gary is a very humble guy. It's one of the things I love about him. He's not filled with ego. He's very ambitious. I mean, anybody who runs for president more than once is very ambitious, and he stormed the political world kind of by surprise in New Mexico. He started at 0.5%, and he won it all, and he was a pretty strong governor for two terms. You know, he really shoved that state to the right on fiscal policy, which, if I may say so, I did in Massachusetts as well.
Let's talk about the position that you and Johnson have, and we've spoken with Johnson on this program. Is this the year that you really want to say there's no difference between the Republican and the Democratic candidate? It just seems like that's not what you really should be saying.
This is not that year at all. The Democratic Party, if it gets in office, the horror show is they spend and borrow us into the poorhouse, and we hollow out the economy, and that hurts us in terms of jobs at home, and it hurts our standing economically, not just diplomatically, in the world at large. The horror show, if the Republicans get in, is President the Donald stays up all night tweeting and unilaterally imposes huge tariffs and declares trade wars and sows trouble with our allies and makes sure that there's greater nuclear proliferation and does everything the opposite of what the Republican Party decided after 2012 it needed to do. And I think the danger posed by Mr. Trump on the international side is probably the biggest danger I see out there. That and a lingering question about stability. It's not just temperament, it's stability to be president of the United States. You know, there's a lot of things that rock the boat, and you can't just get thrown off your game because somebody's rocking the boat. You know, nobody knows better than I do. I've knocked around politics. You can't please everybody, and sometimes you can't please anybody, but you just got to go straight ahead and do what you think is the right thing.
So your candidacy isn't necessarily a critique of the two-party system. It's a sense of alarm about the possibility of Donald Trump. What is your critique of the Democrats?
Oh, no, I have a big, well, my critique of the Democrats would be that their fiscal policies, they're not going to balance the budget. They're going to run up the national debt. If Mrs. Clinton gets two terms, I would say the national debt would be $50 trillion by the time her reign is over. And that's very bad for the economy of the United States. And it's not just some esoteric thing. It would hurt jobs and our position in the world. So, but I do have a very strong critique of the two-party system, because my perception is that for the last 15 years, these two parties in Congress and in Washington have gotten kind of poisonous. And it's partly hyper-gerrymandering, and it's partly just that they hate the other party. So they're only worried about losing in a primary. They're obsessed with re-election. What we need down there is term limits. And the two national campaigns are a faithful reflection of the two parties. And all they're saying is the two-party monopoly is inevitable. The two-party monopoly is inevitable. Therefore, you have to vote for one of us. And you can't vote for the other guy, so therefore you have to vote for me. That is just an argument that assumes its own conclusion. And it disregards the fact that you've got Johnson and Weld, who are a pair of two-term Republican governors. I'm glad the other two tickets have a governor or a former governor on them. They're one-term governors. We are two-term governors, Republicans in blue states who, by definition, had to work across the aisle. And we have very safe and sane fiscal policy and very safe and sane social policies. We're going to leave everybody alone, personal freedom and liberty, in terms of their personal choices, life-work balance, whatever. And on the fiscal side, we've shown that we know how to balance budgets and cut taxes and bring fiscal stability. That's what the country needs.
What was your assessment of Senator Kaine and Governor Pence in their debate last night?
Well, I thought that Governor Pence was a little smoother. Senator Kaine obviously was on hair trigger to interrupt as much as he could. You know, I think they're both good guys. They're members of the community of present and fellow governors. When Senator Kaine stated, "Oh, Donald Trump did X," please explain that. You know, Governor Pence didn't have much to say. I thought Governor Pence also scored some rounds, though. So I've said I give it to Pence on points, not a TKO by any means. They were both pretty good, but give it to Pence on points.
And that's just a style issue in terms
of style issue.
In terms of programs and qualifications to be president, should that condition arise, God forbid, what do you make of Pence versus Kaine?
Well, if you get into the VEEP qualifications themselves, of course, Governor Pence is an arch conservative on social issues, and I'm Johnson and I are way on the other side of that. So that's an issue that would come up then, if you're saying if the Veeps become president. But, you know, the country's not going to go to the dogs with either one of them.
Do you think that to keep the deficit from ballooning, as you say, and to carry out a libertarian program which reduces government involvement in the economy, would you essentially suspend the funding for the Pentagon to achieve that goal?
No. I've never seen a layer of government at any level that couldn't stand a 10 or 20% reduction. And I'm not talking about what they always say, waste, fraud, and abuse. Nobody really knows what that means. I'm talking about programs that are ill-conceived and unnecessary in the first place. For example, the Pentagon itself says that it has 20% more bases than it needs. Congress won't listen because they're obsessed with getting reelected. So everything is in a district. So Congress, rolls up the portcullis and says, "You're not coming in here." The Pentagon itself says that the pay and benefit schedules that have been achieved are more than sufficient to compete with the private sector. So they'd rather have those dollars in hard dollars. They don't really need it on the HR side of the ledger. Congress won't listen because, again, every time you take a dollar away from anybody, somebody screams. And what both Governor Johnson and Governor Weld know how to do is to disregard those screams. But no program that's anywhere near necessary needs to be cut. You just have to assume everything has to justify itself, which they don't do in Washington. They say, "Let's start with last year's appropriation, add 5%. And if the figure this year is any less than that, we will scream bloody murder that it's a cut." That's Washington speak for you.
I have nothing against Gary Johnson, but I'm kind of surprised that you're number two on the ticket. I mean, you never would have messed up the Aleppo business.
Well, you know, Gary called me and asked if I would like to do this, and the answer was yes. We served together. My second term overlapped with his first term, and I had a high opinion of him as the governor, and we've gotten to know each other even better this year, and it's been a real joy going around the country with him, even if pop quizzes are not his long suit, and I acknowledge that.
Well, it's more than a pop quiz. I mean, it's, you know, this Aleppo is a town of extraordinary biblical significance.
It's been in the news. And, yeah. You know, I have traveled a lot around the world the last 10, 12 years, both on business and because I'm a member of an organization of former heads of state that actually Bill Clinton is also a member of. So I get a lot of exposure to foreign policy issues. And I'm sure that over the course of 10 or 12 years, that makes a difference. And that's not been Gary's life. He's been in the western part of the United States when he wasn't in some other continent climbing the highest peak in the continent. He's now climbed all seven. So he's not exactly someone who's a stranger to the world.
Right. But again, that just makes it a little harder to explain. But again, pop quizzes and gotchas, that's not why we wanted you on the phone. It's not why we wanted to speak with you today. Governor, well, what happened to the Republican Party here? I mean, this is something that's near and dear to your heart, even with all your critique.
Yeah, no, it's near and dear to my heart. And I think it started with the 1994 election. After that, the parties just moved further apart. And as I say, the Republicans got more conservative and the Democrats got more liberal. And that's partly because of the gerrymandering that started in 1992. You know, that happens every 10 years. The governors and the state legislatures get together and they decide to protect all the incumbents. And that's made people less centrist. When I first worked in Congress, before all this trouble, if somebody was giving a speech, you know, the galleries would be full in the House or the Senate, people listening to the speech, seeing, do I want to be persuaded? That doesn't happen anymore. If there's a big speech, it's given at 3 a.m. with the camera focused on the speaker's head, so you can't see that the chamber is empty. It's all PR and name calling. It's very unsatisfactory. And I think Gary and I, because we would not be declaring that one party or the other was our enemy, we would be saying, here's six ideas in healthcare. What do you think? You know, I wouldn't come into town and say, all right, the first day I'm going to repeal Obamacare. Even if I wanted to, because I know that's dead on arrival with all the Democrats, I'd say, here are six ideas. Let's do what they always used to do when we pass a big bill, come back 2 years later, 4 years later, and tinker with it to make it better. That's the better mindset. I think it would be refreshing in Washington, frankly.
With all of your critique of the Hillary Clinton program, it sounds like you believe she's more than qualified to be president. You've been quoted as saying that you're not sure anybody's more qualified than Hillary.
Well, I think 6-8 years in the Senate where she had a good reputation and 4 years as Secretary of State is a pretty good resume. At the end of the day, you know, you want a president who's going to make the right decisions. And I know that Johnson will hold the line on taxes and spending. I know he'll show restraint in the military incursion area, which I agree with. Gary and I have influenced each other a bit this year, and I've come to think that the invasions, incursions, supporting the rebels in Iraq and in Syria and Libya has probably moved us on a net basis, probably moved us backwards, not forwards. And, you know, you're putting American blood on foreign soil and boots on the ground, and we got to think twice before we do that, and then think once more.
With the stipulation that obviously 51% is the number that you're really looking for in November, what would be an acceptable progress number for the Libertarian Party in this ballot?
Well, I think we're just going to try and run the table. You know, if Gary gets into, say, the second or third debate, then our name recognition problem goes away. And that our problem now is just quantitative. It's that only 35% of the people have heard enough about Gary Johnson to have an opinion. If we double that because of, you know, people paying more attention the last 6 weeks or getting into the debates, then he doesn't have the negatives of the other two candidates. So I'm not letting go of the idea of running the table just yet. Thank you very much for the invitation, though.
Governor William Weld, thank you so much.
Thanks, John.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.